We finally saw some sunshine and took advantage of it. In Chapter 106, we travel to the beautiful village of Fourcey for a visit.
And if you don't want to take out a reverse mortgage on your house just to dine at a Michelin star restaurant, there's the Bib Gourmand. We'll explain.
We also have another Olympic update for you and so much more. This is Jeff and Julie, moved to France during a global pandemic. Before we get going here today, just a little couple of housekeeping things from my trip back to Canada, which I sort of neglected last week.
Okay. What did you forget?
Well, I know it's kind of kooky, but so there are some things that are very specific to Canada that we brought here to France.
Oh.
That really don't work with the French accessories. And the main thing I'm going to talk about here is the silly little pressure washer, which we bought from Canadian Tire in, like, I don't know, 1991 or two. When did we move to Oakville?
92.
That's how old this pressure washer is.
Yeah, what a workhorse.
Oh, my God, this thing, you just put the oil in and, but here was the problem. So the hose fittings in France, it's the same screw, like it's the same thread of the hose, but it's only a short thing. It's not long like the Canadian one. So the one in France is like, I'm going to say, you know, half an inch or even 3/8 of an inch long.
Uh-huh.
And the Canadian one's easily an inch. And so water would just spew all over because
it wasn't snug enough.
Wasn't snug enough into the washer. And so when I was back visiting my mom and at the Canadian Hall of Fame, all that stuff, I said, hey, Mom, we're going to Canadian Tire. But she, you know, it turned out well because she needed some stuff also, right? Bulbs and that kind of thing. And
okay.
So I bought this hose attachment. Works perfectly. Packed it in my luggage, brought it back, because I've been cleaning the deck with the...
Yeah,
you know.
And doing a really good job,
too. Oh, it's just, it's working like never before. So there was that. And then the other thing that I bought were Robertson's screwdriver heads. So if in Canada, you think, the little square head on the screw, you think that's international. No, it's not. It was invented by a Canadian. I don't know what his name was. Something Robertson.
Don't you think it was Robertson?
Well, I know his last name was Robertson, but what, maybe Bob. Bob Robert. There we go. His name was Bob Robertson.
Bob.
And so my goal is to sell our house somewhere down the line to somebody who works at Orange. That's my goal. And I'm going to punish them with 8 million Canadian screws around this residence. Okay. And so I did bring a lot of hardware when we moved here. And that's my goal in life.
So is it Robertson and Phillips?
Oh,
the Phillip, two types?
Phillips should be hung and shot.
The Phillips is just a crack, right? It's just a...
No, that's the flathead. The Phillips is what the Americans use, and it's just it's a cross.
Oh, right.
And it has zero torque. It's useless. Mm. And the Robertson was created because the Americans couldn't come up with something better than a Phillips. So Bob Robertson came to the rescue with his little square thing.
Well.
And in France, they have torque screws, which are also really good, but... you know, I brought those back because I do use them a lot around here. and then the other thing is I forgot to tell you I had a fiasco at the duty free when I was buying stuff for you.
For me?
Yeah. I was buying things for you. You know, that's what I do.
Oh yeah. I really appreciated the slippers and the maple syrup.
I'm a giver.
Oh, it's thoughtful.
Yeah. And so I'm in there and I see. Oh, look at this. It's a collection of small spices in glass jars, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but I'm noticing that every single one of the packages is the cardboard is ripped, and I'm looking back and I reach back. Oh, there's one that isn't ripped. Pick it up. There are spices and glass and mustard and stuff all over the place in the duty free. And she looks at me like I'm some kind of criminal. And I go, whoa, you know, this is not my problem. Look, they're all ripped and
crappy packaging.
Yeah, crappy packaging. Probably from China.
Yeah.
And so I had to walk away, but it's not my problem. I mean, I picked it up like a normal person.
Right. And did they like...
They cleaned it up and we moved on.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, but just, you know, like, it's again, just cheap, you know, incompetence, you know.
Well, it's the duty free.
Well, and you know what? The duty free is not, it's not that big of a deal. It's not that big of a savings.
It depends. Like on some cosmetic things, there's a little bit of an advantage there.
Yeah, but last time I bought my concealer. Anyway, that's it. Those are my two remaining stories for my trip home.
Right. And since you've been home, we've used our garbage badge for the first time.
Badge.
We have a badge. Le badge.
Yeah, it's the same as a credit card, but they call it a badge, and it allows you access to the new garbage bins. That this is a test thing. We're definitely a part of a pilot project here because I'm not seeing these things anywhere else.
Well, we were in a different department yesterday, and
right.
They didn't have the same system. So I think this is particular to Fumel,
mm-hmm.
And they've got this. So now they've relocated. What used to be the garbage bins and put in these new machines that you have access to by using your badge, and you open up the drawer and drop your black bag into the bin.
Oh, yeah. You need a manual here for all this. It's like,
yeah.
It's like trying to get into the Pentagon.
I mean... It's not as complicated as I thought it was going to be, but there are rules. And I still don't know what you can put in those garbage bags.
Or what you can't.
Or what you can't.
And we're not going to talk about that.
All right. So we were on our way to use our badge for the very first time, and we get there and we see the truck and emptying the bin, so blocking the access to the garbage bin, right?
Right, and I go, oh, of course, the one time that we go for the garbage and our first time, and there's a guy there. So I roll down the window, and I'm thinking, oh, I'll just take a picture of this for the podcast.
Yep, and so he leaves, vacates, and stops his truck.
Yeah.
We make our way to the new bin, and he all of a sudden gets out of his truck.
And he's storming, sort of.
And starts walking towards us.
I'm sitting there thinking, okay, what have I done now in this country? What have I done now?
And this is not a tiny fella. He was sturdy. And he's coming towards us, and I'm going, okay. Anyway, he was hyper concerned that we had taken a photograph of him and wanted us to guarantee that it wouldn't be posted anywhere or sent to media. And I'm thinking, okay, well, no. I explained to him it was just ironic that the first time we wanted to use it, it was blocked. And he warmed up to us after we started explaining.
And after I walked away, saying to myself, you can't tell me what to do with my photos.
I'm glad you didn't confront him because you would be like, yeah.
Well, he would have snapped me like a twig if it came to that. But anyway, I just.
Well, he was kind enough after everything settled down to show us how to use the bin for the first time.
Yeah, you see, because he warmed up to Little Miss Julie.
That's right.
Medal of Honor winner.
Diffusing the situation.
Once again.
Yes. So it's good that he was there because you swiped the badge.
No. I did it correctly.
You did it?
Okay. Yeah.
Because you kind of have to stick the badge to the...
But he was saying most people swipe it and then they just get frustrated and leave their garbage there.
Yeah. And so I've been to other places and there are, unfortunately, lots of garbage bags that are not in the bin. They're just around the bin. So this is not working, I think, as well as they thought it would be. And that's part of the reason that he didn't want any photograph.
Yeah, and I understand.
You know, because
he doesn't need it. He's just doing his job.
Yeah, people are complaining to the media that this is not working. And so I think he was being a bit sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
But it all worked out okay. We dropped off our bag.
And then you later got a picture of the garbage around one of these new units, and I'll try and remember to include that on the Facebook page.
Yeah, so it's going through some struggles, for sure.
And then also, you're going to be needing your badge to go to the dishittery, because now you have to pull up...
It's not a dishittery.
Yeah, it's a dishittery, but for me, it's a dishittery because that's what I do. I de-shitterize. But yes, so now you're going to go up there, and this is one thing I don't know, because... This is the pilot project year, so nothing counts this year, but beginning next February, they're going to start charging us per load, and I'm wondering if that's going to be the same case at the dishettery, because now you have to show your badge, and the gate will go up. So I'm just wondering if they're going to charge us for that, too.
I don't know. It's a good question, but the one thing that they're trying to do is remove the fee that you automatically pay for household pickup.
On your taxes.
On your taxes, because there used to be, up until February 12th, a garbage truck that would come and pick up and collect garbage in all the communes.
Yeah, and we decided, we tried it once, and the guy opened our garbage, looked in there, which I kind of find weird, and then put a bunch of stickers on the bin, and I thought, okay, that's it. I'm not doing that again. I'll just take it myself.
And didn't pick it up. Didn't take it.
So and didn't take it, right.
It didn't work.
No, I think he took it, but he put stickers all over our bin.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure this is France's way or this department's way of trying to go green, but I question the fact that now everybody has to get in their car.
Ah.
To go to the bin to drop off their garbage.
Yeah, see, this was supposed to be a green initiative, and now we've got 8 million cars going to a bin instead of one truck.
Yes, and then there's still a truck that has to go collect it.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that this logic was...
Once again, not well thought out, maybe. You know, we're going to get into some of this other stuff, but with respect to green energy, I mean... What's the rush? Everything is rushed with green energy, like the solar thing, which I hope we're not getting into in this podcast. That's a rush to judgment. Remember when they had, remember back in Canada or around the world, they had the low flow toilets. Why didn't they just take a page out of the European thing where they've got, you know, they've got a button for pee and a button for poo?
A light deposit and a heavy deposit.
Yeah. So why didn't they just do that? Oh, no. Low flow toilets in Canada, and then you need two flushes.
At least. So that doesn't save any.
No. And, you know, biofuel, remember biofuel?
Yep.
And now you're taking food off the crops and putting it into gas tanks and just things that just have been really a rush to judgment. And I just wish they would, like, wait to hear our Olympic update coming up here in a bit. It's another one of these rush to judgment
things.
Yeah,
but I think the whole world is in a rush.
Yeah.
Like it's not just green energy. It's like rush for AI, rush.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we're getting into a bit of trouble.
I do too. Wanted to just quickly, we haven't done comments in a while on the podcast.
Oh, you've got new comments?
Oh, I got tons of comments here and I just want to get to them. So first of all, I'm going to get to the comments from our 100th. We haven't had time to do that yet.
I thought we had done that. Maybe not.
We did?
Maybe not.
I thought we did. Did we do that already?
Maybe not. I'm not sure.
If we did, bear with us again. Well, I'll tell you what. I won't. Okay, forget it then. I won't do those. We've done them. I'll do these though. And this comes from, you know where this comes from? And I didn't even know there were comments. Is the on iTunes. Like when you go to our podcast on iTunes, I didn't even notice. All of a sudden I'm looking, you know where they put the stars in?
Yeah.
And we have 5. There were comments. And I thought, I've never read these comments. I've never even seen these comments. So maybe there's one on Spotify too. And I will check that through a friend because I'm not on Spotify. But this is one of the greatest comments I've ever read about our podcast. I mean, it's so well written. It comes from Jay, who penned this in January, living vicariously through Jeff and Julie. Stumbling upon this podcast was like discovering a hidden gem in the depths of my wanderlust, as I found myself daydreaming about a future retirement in the enchanting south of France. Jeff and Julie's show unexpectedly entered my auditory realm, injecting a burst of motivation into my distant dreams. With over a decade and a half until retirement, their anecdotes and insights resonate deeply, making the prospect of turning this fantasy into reality all the more tangible. Jeff and Julie bring authenticity to the table, keeping it real while weaving a tapestry of humor that's both genuine and infectious. The laughter and chemistry between them create a camaraderie that feels like sharing a meal with old friends. And how many times have we had that comment, you know?
Yeah,
love
that's,
that.
That's very nice. And it kind of shows that we're just being ourselves.
I'm particularly drawn to Jeff's journey of learning French later in life, a pursuit I can undoubtedly relate to. Their commitment to embracing new challenges with grace and a dash of humor serves as a reminder that it's never too late to venture into uncharted territories. Jeff and Julie's podcast not only entertains, but also inspires a sense of adventure. Their phrase of the week has become a delightful ritual, adding a touch of linguistic charm to each episode. Here's to Jeff and Julie, the modern-day storytellers, stirring the pot of possibility, making the road to retirement feel like a culinary escapade through the sun-soaked landscapes of Provence.
Wow.
Isn't that nice?
That's really great and so well-written.
Beautifully written. And finally, from Little Dave, love this show and really look forward to it each Friday. Jeff and Julie have a comical view of their trials and tribulations of moving to France while the world was under lockdown. With the pandemic over, J&J relive what it's like adjusting to life in a rural Southwest France in a very humorous way. They do a wonderful job explaining the scenery and different customs while traveling to numerous beautiful locations throughout France. I had no interest in this region of France before joining Jeff and Julie on their weekly stories, but I'm anxious to travel there now. Thank you, Dave.
Wow, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you what, we'll abandon the other comments because you say we've already
done
them.
Well, no, go ahead.
We'll just do them another time.
No, but if you read one, I'll know if I've heard it before.
From Catherine Arfo, from the 100th. I adore your show. Jeff's rants are hilarious, and Julie's infectious laugh is adorable. Your podcast keeps me entertained and sane while I'm trapped on my daily commute to work on the 401 and DVP. Oh, yeah, this is ringing a bell. Insert Jeff rant here about Toronto traffic. Congratulations on your 100th show. Looking forward to hearing more about your venture. Okay, I guess we did that.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Yep, but no, it's okay.
You know what that's called?
What?
Senior moment. All right, let's move on. We went to, let me say this, and you judge me.
Okay.
Because that's for you.
With pleasure.
So good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Fourcé.
That's right.
Okay, spell it for the good people.
F-O-U-R-C-E, accent grave, S.
Okay. And right. It was a little, I got to say, it was a little outside the day trip distance for me. It was like 90 plus minutes.
Yeah.
Each way.
Yeah, and we traveled into Gers, which is another
G-E-R-S.
Mm. And traveling to that region, and that region is beautiful, but we have to go through a bigger city, actually the capital city of this department. And it's just not a silly city.
It is a silly city. Agen.
Yes, and it's kind of takes the fun out of it because we like bouncing on the country roads and
winding around up and down the hills, and then you get to Agen, you just want to pull the pin. Holy, what a dump! It's a dump.
Not all sections are a dump, but the part we have to go through is dumpish for sure. And so, you know, we go into the Occitanie region in Gers. And this village, Fourcé, is also one of the most beautiful villages in France. It's a classified village.
We are running out of most beautiful villages in France to go see, so we're going to have to start going to some of the least beautiful villages.
No, the thing is, there are beautiful places in different environments all over France. Not all of them gain the classification.
That's true.
Because there are certain guidelines and rules that have to be applicable. But there are places that have their charm and are beautiful, but not necessarily classified.
Now, this place was really cool. It has a chateau. We weren't able to access the chateau, but got some really nice shots of it from the outsides. Got a river running right alongside it.
Yep.
And then the tower in the town was 13th century, you said?
13th century. Yeah, that used to be the official entrance into the town.
From another river on the other side.
Right. Now, I wondered if it was the same river that's on a loop.
Could be on a fork.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the Oise River, and I'm not sure.
Boy, was it ever brown. You'll see in the photos that we took. I mean, it's been just raining like mad dogs here. And as a result, the rivers are high and they're moving and rolling. And the water is just mud.
Murky. And when you go through the clock tower, you go into the center of the city. What makes Fourcé very different than any of the other villages we've visited is their square is round.
Yeah, the square is round. And there's a reason for it.
Well, they decided that they would build the houses around the chateau, which used to be in the center of the village.
Now it's a park with trees.
That's right. It hasn't been there for years. So the new chateau that was built.
The new 14th century chateau or
that's
whatever.
Right, 15th, yeah.
Yeah, because the original that got torn down, I guess it was, 10th century, you said?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of 13th century colombage homes, like the mairie, which you took a picture of, is a great example of with the wood, right? It's a combination timber.
Red brick.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so those are, you know, date back, you know, centuries. And then there's some newer ones that are 17th, 18th. Yeah. Newer,
yeah.
17th, 18th
IKEA.
Century.
Yeah.
And, you know, they did a great job at the planting of the trees. Like, it's really quite pretty. So it's winter. The leaves are not on the trees. The branches haven't grown out. The village had a few people walking around, but it was really quiet because it's not the time of year to go visit. I think if you really want to get the lively, you know, activity, the stores open, you know, it needs to be during the spring and summer months.
But we didn't care. We just wanted to get the hell out of here because it was a nice sunny day.
It was a nice day.
16 degrees.
Yeah.
We actually dropped the top, you know, like Canadians do when it's 16 degrees.
Everybody's
kind
of looking at us.
Yeah.
Oh, they must be from up north.
Yeah. And we just wanted to get out of here and go have a nice lunch. And one of so Julie made a reservation at the restaurant, which looked much more regal online. But I got to tell you, the charm of this restaurant.
Yes.
Oh.
It's L'Auberge Fourcée. And, you know, you walk in and there's a little bar area. And you know, we got there at around noon and there were patrons that were, you know, enjoying their beverage. And then there's the dining room. And, you know, there's a smattering of people. But by the time we finished our lunch, the place was full.
Jammed. And here's the best part. First of all, we had a drink outside. We were the only ones who did that. Oh, they're Canadians again. but the restaurant is owned and managed by a beautiful Bernese
Mountain dog.
Mountain dog. He is the maitre d'. And he's not very helpful to the staff, but he's a greeter. And he is just amazing. Big dog, mud all over his nose. And he sat at our table with his paws crossed. I got a nice picture of that.
Yeah. Do you remember his name?
Percy.
Mm-hmm. And if we translate that into English, it's parsley.
Parsley. Persil. He's just sweet. And then there was another dog in the restaurant. I was saying to my mom, I sent her a note today. My heart rate just goes down, drops right down to zero when I am in a restaurant with dogs. I don't know what it is. Canada, we've said this before, get the stick out of your butt. It's just like, no, seriously, we're so wound. Canadians are wound so tight when it comes to stuff like this. These dogs, you know, and he's going from table to table, and every once in a while, you know, the owner would say, Pasil, you know, but nobody cared.
No, they're very welcome. They're part of, you know, the whole experience.
Yeah.
You know, it occurred to me that we have not taken any of our dogs to a restaurant.
Well, okay, there's only one that I think it would really, well, I think on an individual basis, each dog would work.
I think so.
But Big Blue would be the best.
Yeah, he's the most chill.
Yeah, he's the most chill. Well, we're going to do that this year. Let's make that a goal. We'll make that a podcast.
Yeah, okay. Well, like when it's outdoor weather, so he's not inside.
I'm just not tying him to anything. Like, I'm not going to tie him to a table because if he did see something and went nuts, he'd be dragging the table all over the town. We don't want that.
No.
So we'll just, but he should be good enough.
Yeah. Well, all in all, I really appreciated, you know, getting out and seeing something different and, you know, ticking off another beau village. It really is sweet. But again, recommendation, go when there's more activity, spring, summer.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a way to tour that chateau.
Oh, I think so. It's a hotel.
Oh, it's a hotel, I see.
It's a hotel, and they also have a wine bar.
Oh, yeah, that's right, the wine bar. I took a picture of that. That looked really cool.
Yeah.
So I'm
sure that you can, but you can't really go visit unless you're a patron.
They also had a thing there. There was a sign in English, actually.
Uh-huh.
If you want to learn how to cook in France, but speak English, you can go there for cooking lessons.
That's great.
Yeah. I mean, 90 minutes is too far for us, but yeah, you know, somebody could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, it was a worthwhile trip. Just nice, as you say, nice getting out. And now the rain's back today. Yay! God, I'm telling you, the rivers are so high here, it's nuts.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So the other day, I was sitting in my car, and in a van, I see a dog sitting in the passenger seat. And I thought that was really weird because it was a British car. So he was actually
in the
driver's seat. So it looked absolutely as though he was driving the car.
I wonder if the guy does that just on purpose, drive people crazy.
And it was a big dog. Like he looked like seriously, he was like he could be behind a steering wheel. So.
We do have a lot of British cars here, and to me, it's ridiculous because it's almost like just. Picture yourself, you're driving down the wrong side of the road, so your steering wheel is towards the ditch, closest to the ditch all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's dangerous.
Well, I wouldn't want to drive. It would be too confusing for me, I think.
Remember that time in England when I was...
Yep. Yep. We pick up the rental car and there's a roundabout and you access the roundabout and then turn right back into the rental car.
Well, I had...
And you're just like...
Because it was the wrong way, right? You're going the wrong way around the roundabout. Yeah. And so I just needed to focus for a second and get my bearings. And then did I have one problem after that?
No, we drove all the way into Wales,
mm-hmm.
and you, no problem. What you,
I had to
just
take,
a pro.
I had to close my eyes and just do a reverse of everything that I know. And then once you do that, away you go. But the first one was like, I'm not ready for this.
White knuckle.
Time now for another Paris 2024 Olympic update.
So there's been a bit of a kerfuffle. Regarding the Olympics, and it has to do with the Olympic Village, where 10,000 plus athletes will be lodged during the Olympics in July, end of July. These buildings, which are new, were built without air conditioning.
Here we go.
In an effort to be the greenest Olympic ever.
Rush.
They decided to install geothermal instead of air conditioning.
Don't get me going on geothermal. Holy hell.
So, a lot of the delegations are complaining. And some, like the Australian delegation, has purchased over 100,000 euro worth of air conditioners, portable ones, so that their athletes can install them in their room. Greece is complaining. Ireland is complaining. So it's a big deal.
It's going to end up this rush to judgment of getting these machines of going geothermal is going to end up costing them on the carbon footprint.
I think you're right.
Absolutely.
Like in July, there are temperatures that go up to 108 degrees. Last year, it went up to 108 degrees.
Yeah.
In France, there were 5,000 deaths because it was so hot.
The heat.
So this geothermal thing, they claim will keep the athletes cool. They're claiming that it'll be 6 degrees cooler than the outdoor weather. So if it's 40 degrees outside... Your room temperature -6 will be 34.
We did a pond loop of geothermal at our place in Rockwood. Useless.
Yeah.
Useless.
So the Olympic Committee said that they will have available portable units to rent for any team member that wants to.
See, here we go. And portable units use more than the, wired-in units, my understanding.
Yeah.
It's just a mess. Why do you have to be first? Why don't you do it properly?
Maybe they were well-intentioned. I mean, I think the engineers angled the building so that the sun didn't hit them at a certain time of day. And like they were trying to be conscious. But bottom line, these athletes are not coming for a picnic.
No.
They're coming to...
And they're not coming to be a part of an experiment.
Yeah.
This is
important, and they have to have their rest. They have to be comfortable in order to perform at the highest level. So, I think it's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing develops, because I don't imagine they're going to be attaining their green goals this.
No. I mean, and again, it's just drawing unnecessary and negative attention. And now it's going to take more work, as if they don't have enough work already. And I mean, I'm hoping the Aussies purchase those AC units in France, because if they're, you know, lugging them along, you know, with them from Australia, well, there's a nice little addition to the carbon footprint.
Yeah. They're even, Australia's even hiring a heat specialist for the team.
Well, they know all about their heat over there in Australia, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
So what is this Bib Gourmand? Because you've been talking about this all week, and I got to tell you, this sounds really cool.
I didn't know it existed, but, you know, in the news, there were 56 French restaurants that were included now in the Michelin Guide under the Bib Gourmand.
Okay, so this is clearly different category, different criteria.
Yes.
Than the expensive hoity-toity Michelin restaurants.
Yeah, the Bib Gourmand awards this title when the food is declared delicious and good, and a three-course meal is under 40 euros in provincial France, and 45 euros for three courses in Paris.
Okay, so that's quite a bit less than the Michelin experiences we've had.
Yes. And Bib, just as a fun fact, his real name is Bibendum.
Oh, I thought it had to do with, like, you put a bib on.
No, it's Bib the Michelin Man. Bibendum is the Michelin Man.
Oh, I see. That's his name?
Yeah, that's his name.
You mean the white guy with all the
yeah, he
roles?
Didn't used to be all white, but yeah.
Oh.
He was a marketing tool. The Michelin Brothers created Bib the Michelin Man back in the late 1800s. And he grew to represent the brand. And this is kind of funny. It comes from a Latin saying, nunc est bibendum.
Oh.
Which means...
Is this the Latin phrase of the day?
No. It's a twofer. It's a twofer. And I took Latin, but I don't remember that at Villa Maria. Nunc est bibendum, which translates to now is the time to drink.
Okay, well, people reawoke after falling asleep during the beginning of that when you said drink. Yeah.
So at the beginning, Bib the Michelin Man would hold up a cup of brew, of whatever, like whatever it was.
Oh, I see.
And then the slogan kind of slowly migrated that, you know, the tires absorb and drink the road.
Great. What a great promotion for drinking and driving.
Well, he stopped drinking in 1920. But
fantastic. Not a moment too soon, Bib.
Anyway, it's really interesting. Our region, Nouvelle-Aquitaine, got 9 new restaurants.
Okay.
The winning region was Brittany with 10.
Okay.
You know, we just did a quick little search and we found one and have made reservations. So we will be trying our first Bib Gourmet restaurant.
Fantastic.
Gourmand restaurant.
I'm looking forward to it. And now, do they, just a quick question, do they take the atmosphere into play as well, like the Michelin people do?
I don't think that
it's just reasonable, good food.
The inspectors probably take that into consideration. I mean, if it's you know, not well kept then I think that the probably wouldn't advise people to go eat there.
Isn't that the greatest job in the whole world? All you do, in your job is you go from restaurant to restaurant, enjoying wine, fine dining, good service on somebody else's tab, and then make a report. Oh my God, that's the best job in the world.
Anyway, I'm really looking forward to it, and we'll see, you know, how that whole system works. And that brings me to the French phrase of the day.
Yay! It's about food, I hope.
Oui, no? Mais yes? Oui, mais oui.
Okay. Mon favorite.
Alors, voici. On ne peut pas faire de cuisine si l'on n'aime pas les gens.
Okay.
On ne peut pas faire de cuisine si l'on n'aime pas les gens.
I think I know what this is. I think I know what this is.
Okay, go ahead.
We cannot make the food if we don't like the people.
That's it.
Is that it?
Bingo bango.
See, this
You're
is why
You're getting so good. You're getting so good.
This is why I could never be a chef.
Yeah, so that phrase was coined by one of the most declarated Michelin chefs in France.
Okay.
Joël Robuchon. He's received 28 Michelin stars.
Oh, so he's been, I see,
yeah,
I see.
And he's got
wow.
restaurants all over France. So that was a quote from his kitchen.
Wow, if you don't, you can't make the food if you don't like the people. Well, that's true, I guess, because, yeah. you know, that is, you know, your customer base is people, but...
My coffee is cold. My peas are too overcooked.
I mean, I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I can't do it.
Yeah. Well, it's not your thing. You're not in the kitchen very often.
No. That's the least of my worries. It's the people. This is the part that I couldn't deal with.
Right.
You know, like you say, cooking is somewhat similar to, you know, building.
Woodworking,
because mm-hmm. you're working off plans and mm-hmm. recipes. And so there is a similarity there. So I could do it from that point of view. But no, I just couldn't deal with the comments.
So then I would estimate that you couldn't do any job that has a public.
Pretty much.
That you're directly in contact with.
That's a fair comment.
Yeah. Being in a studio
yeah.
when there's no other humans.
It's perfect.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Wow.
Great. Yeah,
I never
yeah.
thought of it that way.
Yeah.
You couldn't have done anything else.
No, I could not have. No.
Wow.
No, I would make, no, mm-mm. I can't think of a scenario where selling, like being a salesperson or any of that stuff, or, no, couldn't do it. Isn't that great? Isn't it good to know things like that?
Yeah.
Before you punch someone in the head for no reason? All right, so that's it. That was a nice long one, but we had lots of fun. This was a good... lots of content in today's podcast. It was good to get out. It was good to get out.
And we will be expanding our culinary experience by going to dine at Clément, l'artisan culinaire, in the nearby village of Lauzun.
Yes, we will take the Bib Gourmand on for the first time, and we will have that for you on next Friday's podcast in Chapter 107. We will report back from our very first Bib Gourmand experience.
À très vite.
Au revoir.